It's a Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. 90.5 WESA celebrates Inventing Pittsburgh is a new series exploring the city's lesser-known history by connecting the Steel City's past to its present.
In 1931, Pittsburgh's mayor, Charles H. Klein, decided to do a little office decorating. Not all mayors are so invested in their aesthetic environs, but according to Ann Mataraz, Museum Division Director at the Heinz History Center, Klein liked the finer things in life.
You see him described in the newspapers as a dapper gent. He goes to Horn's, that's the boutique department store in the city at the time.
There at Horn's, he pays $1,350 for the large Persian carpet he'd had his eye on.
He's the mayor. He wants it to look good. He wants to dignify the office.
Political office requires a certain amount of dignity, to be sure. But dropping more than a grand on office furnishings in 1931 is problematic in a couple ways. For starters, says Mataraz, it's illegal.
If you were to purchase something at the time for the city and it was over $500, you had to put it to bid.
For another thing, the country is sliding into the depths of the Great Depression. By 1931, unemployment in Pennsylvania is more than 25%. Western Pennsylvania is particularly hard hit. Mills and coal mines are closed or closing. At a time when most families are struggling to buy bread, Klein spends the modern-day equivalent of $20,000 on a rug.
As a political officer who's entrusted to operate the finances of the city, this becomes the piece that's the tipping point for the public.
By June of that fateful carpet-buying year, Klein and his director of supplies were indicted on 45 counts of misuse of funds. The rug was not on the docket. The court found him guilty of illegally purchasing three trucks, and Klein resigned in 1933. He died a few months later. Though his conviction was later appealed and overturned, the demise of Klein's administration marked the end of a political era both locally and nationally, says Mataraz.
He's caught up in a larger historical moment where this rug just becomes the easy symbol for everything that's wrong with the country and all the problems that it was having. And you see a real shift from the Republican leadership to Democratic.
Charles Klein's rug came to represent the wrong way to govern. It lived on the floor of the mayor's office as a kind of warning for eight subsequent administrations, until...
It stood for corrupt practice in government. She would not tolerate that.
Joseph Sabino Mystic, now a law professor at Duquesne University, was Mayor Sophie Maslov's executive secretary. She couldn't stand the reminder of Klein's legacy and thought the rug was a bad symbol to keep around, says Mystic. So in 1992, Klein's rug was donated to what is now the Heinz History Center.
One day, they walked into her office one morning, and it was wall-to-wall blue carpet, and the rug was gone. Called the Public Works Department and said, replace this rug.
Both Maslov and Klein spent the entirety of their adult lives in government. The difference, says Mystic, is that Maslov saw herself as a public servant.
She was one of those old-timers who believed that government existed to serve the people.
Klein's rug certainly didn't cause the 80-year run of Democratic mayors in Pittsburgh. But the tale of his ruinous good taste illuminates Democratic government here. Democratic with a little d, that is. The mayor vows to honestly represent the city. And though it may take a little while for the public to find out, Pittsburghers do not take foul play lightly. For 90.5 WESA Celebrates Inventing Pittsburgh, I'm Margaret J. Krause.
90.5 WESA Celebrates Inventing Pittsburgh is supported by UPMC. Ask your Pittsburgh history question and find more stories online at wesa.fm/inventingpittsburgh. UPMC, life-changing medicine.
And Margaret J. Krause is with us now in Studio A. So the moral of that story is think twice before you buy an expensive rug, Margaret?
I think generally whenever you make a large investment, you want to think carefully about that.
Who knew? That was a really interesting piece of history and something that I'm guessing very few Pittsburghers know about, which would really speak to the point of your series, right?
Yeah, we're hoping that by choosing either lesser-known events or events that are well-known but have some little sneaky way into them, that will illuminate more of the character of Pittsburgh and how it came to be.
What are some of those lesser-known stories about Pittsburgh past that you are honing in on?
Well, someone asked me the other day how I was going to find 48 separate incidents of Pittsburgh history, and I'm having the opposite problem, which is we have a list of hundreds of events. Some of them like Nate Smith broke the unions and found a way to get African Americans and women into skilled trade unions. There was a rumored mastodon found on Hers Island, which can talk about sort of urban development. There's a spoiler alert there. There's a 1936 Pittsburgh Banana Company explosion. You can look at the Pennsylvania Railroad and American innovation in the commercial space. There's all sorts of weird things here.
Well, let's talk about some of this, kind of flesh it out a little bit. Nate Smith, and this goes back to the 60s in Pittsburgh,
yes.
Right? And he was a very formidable figure, and sadly, he is no longer with us. He would be a great person to talk to, a lesser celebrated figure not only of the labor movement, but really of civil rights.
Yes. He's a particularly incredible figure, and sadly he did pass away. When I heard about his story, I immediately went to see if he was still living, and sadly he is not. But he was in the Navy in World War II, and he was discharged because they found out he was underage, so he had to come home. He was a boxer, and he used his boxing time to make friends and also find a way to train himself on heavy equipment, heavy machinery. And when there was this huge heavyweight fight in Pittsburgh, he managed to trade tickets to the sold-out fight for a union card into the then segregated union. He was famous for lying down in front of bulldozers. He marched with thousands. He shut down construction on USX and
Three River Stadium.
Three River Stadium. Just an incredible figure. And at one point in time, his reading wasn't amazing. And then it didn't matter because he was just such a huge figure.
And so that's just one story. And then this, you can't just mention bananas in the Strip District in passing and not. What was going on with the banana, the proliferation? Not to give away too much of your story, but what was going on there?
So at one point in time, the banana was not the fruit that we know now. It wasn't so common. It wasn't a ubiquitous addition to a lunchtime. And the Pennsylvania Railroad owned the Pittsburgh Banana Company. And Americans, unfortunately, weren't so interested in green bananas. And didn't matter. Just let them sit a couple days. Let them ripen. People weren't super into that. So they had these warming houses built that would hasten ripening, and there was a huge explosion. But there were no fatalities. So it's open season on jokes.
Okay. Well, that's just one episode that we have to look forward to. What are some things that you've uncovered, Margaret, that might surprise us?
Well, I think due to our geographic location, oftentimes we talk about Pittsburgh – that it's completely unique and it's developed in isolation, so on and so forth. Or you could say that. And I know that Rick Seeback has a column entitled All Roads Lead to Pittsburgh, and that is true. If you look hard enough, there's a Pittsburgh connection everywhere. But maybe more important, Pittsburgh leads everywhere in the sense that it is connected to all these giant world trends. I think one of the things I found most interesting is that before steel, glass was our major industry. And you can find lamps out west that are made in Pittsburgh because we made it possible for the West to be built. Timber, glass, rope, all sorts of sort of basic things. You can find our DNA across the United States because we were at one time, St. Louis, the gateway to the West.
Very interesting. Well, right, because the Lewis and Clark expedition really began in earnest here at the Point.
That's right. They shoved off.
So you have all this history and all of this inventiveness. Are there things, I was asking you about things that might surprise us. Are there things that surprised you? Something that you came across and said, I can't even wrap my mind around the idea that this came from Pittsburgh or that this happened in Pittsburgh.
It's not so much – I'm not –
I'm really putting you on the spot here.
That's okay.
I
think that's good. That's what, it's live, folks. I think less throwing my hands up in shock and more just like, oh, well, that fits. Things that you can look around in Pittsburgh and see there are roots to. So Pittsburgh primarily was founded by these fiery Scotch Presbyterians at first, Scotch-Irish Presbyterians. And these are the people who are going around punching tax collectors in the face for the Whiskey Rebellion. And it's like, well, with that as our sort of core mindset, that makes sense that this is a town that doesn't give up. I think less the surprise and more just connecting the dots and being so glad to see the dots connected.
It's a town with a real feisty history, isn't it?
It is. Oh, yeah. I mean, these are people who can go around. There was a famous preacher at First Presbyterian who was named one of the top 100 preachers in the world, and that's, you know, probably a distinction we wouldn't
another
see.
List. Yeah. Another list of Pittsburgh's on top of.
We were always just top of the charts.
Top Presbyterian ministers.
And he lived at the Duquesne Club, and he had to have – the Duquesne Club is across from First Presbyterian. He had to have a group of people protect him as he went across the streets because there would be crowds of people waiting to talk to him. And he was a teetotaler. He was not – you know, so but during Prohibition, you have to imagine that man had a cocktail.
Just and the Duquesne Club would be a good place to do it.
Precisely, it's just a funky town.
It really is, and you have captured so much of it, and are in the process of doing that with your series, and it's 48 episodes.
48.
Fantastic. Well, we will look forward to hearing more of the WESA Pittsburgh Celebrates Little Known History episodes that Margaret J. Krause, who's been our guest, is looking into for our benefit and edification, and really loved the first episode. You're a great storyteller, and we'll look forward to hearing more of your work on our air.
Great. Thanks so much.
And thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.fm or as one of those growing podcasts, those ever-popular podcasts in iTunes that more and more people are listening to. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Thank you for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow with another edition of Essential Pittsburgh.